Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and we have a very special guest today. Mike Pitts has joined us, and Mike is going to talk to us a little bit for Mentor Monday, which, may I remind you, it's Monday, get your entries in on time. Your Dog Show Superintendents Association appreciates your thoughtfulness. And Mike is going to talk to us a little bit today about his mentors and the people that he has mentored who have gone on to be successful. And I'm very interested to hear this conversation. So thank you for joining us, Mike.
Sure.
So talk to us a little bit. You are at kind of a pinnacle, you and Linda. Linda won Best in Show at the National Championship Dog Show with a Poolie.
Right.
You guys are doing great with a Cocker. And you guys have reached the top where a lot of people think they want to get to. So let's talk about how you got there and equally some of the people that you've seen go forward from working for you, from learning from you, and what they've gone on to do. I think that's a really great story. So
I would probably need to take notes to remember everybody that's worked for us and what they ended up doing.
Well, we just talked to Jason Lynn.
Right.
A great one, a great example of one of the folks that has worked for you. And so where did you start? Who was your mentor?
My foundation is Cocker Spaniels, and I work for a man named Charles Self, who recently passed away last year. And he had in turn worked for Terry Stacy. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a family tree, I guess you could say.
Right.
But I worked for him for several years before I started doing this on my own. You know, in between, I worked for some other Cocker handlers. Linda worked for Houston and Toddie Clark for, I think, around 11 years. She started working for them when she was still in high school and all through college and after that. So they were great mentors. I lived in Tennessee, so I saw the Clarks, you know, all the time. And they've been great mentors to both of us, and they're really, you know, very good friends now. You learn from not only the people I think you work for, but the people that you admire and you watch, and, you know, you might see a dog or the way they have a dog trimmed, and you can go learn something from them. You know, you don't necessarily have to work for that person. I know Linda learned a lot of things from a lot of other people, you know, because the Clarks were all breed handlers, and she learned a lot of things about, an example would be Cocker Spaniels, if they had a Cocker Spaniel, because back then, you know, there were so many different Cocker Spaniel handlers. She would go to those people for finer points in grooming or whatever for specific breeds.
So give me an idea of somebody you admired back when you were just
when
starting
I was
out.
A kid.
When you were a young buck.
When I was a young buck, I probably started doing this when I was 13 or 14. And back then, there were probably 30 or 40 very, very successful Cocker handlers in all parts of the country. And, you know, there were lots of Cocker Spaniels then, whereas now there aren't. But Ted Young, Charles was where I lived, Terry and Charlotte Stacy, Mike Kinsler, Norman Austin. Norman had stopped showing dogs when I started showing dogs, but, you know, of course, I knew who he was because he was, like a godfather of the breed, so to speak. But, you know, I learned a lot from all those people just watching them. And I would hang out at the crates. Back then, we had lots and lots of specialties that would have huge entries. I remember when the first time I went to Beverly Hills, we had a Cocker specialty that weekend, and there were 175 dogs.
175 in a variety or in the whole breed?
All Cocker Spaniels.
Oh, my gosh.
But, and now, probably 15 years ago, I was at Beverly Hills, and there was one Cocker Spaniel.
Right.
So things are different in regards to the amount of Cocker Spaniels that are being shown. You know, different breeds are different. I think if, like myself, with Cocker Spaniels is a very specialty-oriented breed. Like, an all-breed handler doesn't show Cocker Spaniels.
They're a lot of work, right?
They're
a lot of time.
Well, they're a lot of work, and there's so many breed-specific things you have to do. And I think it's like poodles are the same way.
Yes.
So that's all you really have time to do because there's so much preparation to getting the dog ready to go
in
the ring.
How long does it take you to do up this dog?
It probably takes an hour and a half every day to do him right.
Right.
You know, it depends on the weather and humidity,
where you are,
et cetera.
And if it's raining, and like we're here in Vallejo and we were showing in the mud, and you get to do him again
and again
and again. So I think one of the things that you and I have talked about this just earlier today, I've talked to a number of people about this. We see folks today that maybe aren't as excited about putting in that kind of time and effort that some of us did. Give us your thoughts on why it's worth doing it.
Well, the thing about it is, back, and a lot of young people wouldn't even realize this or remember this, but when Linda and I worked for Charles and the Clarks, our goal was to learn all we could learn. And when we stopped being apprentices and started being dog handlers, back then you had to be licensed by the American Kennel Club.
Right.
Well, when Linda and I got married and started doing this, that was the year they stopped licensing dog handlers.
I was thinking,
and so you can, so everybody said, well, that's great, you don't have to do that. Well, it wasn't great to us, because that's what we had strived for all our lives,
right?
Was to get our handler's license.
Right.
So we weren't able to do
and
that.
And so a question for you, and this is something I really sincerely want to know the answer to this, because I have a thought, what I think, but I'm curious what you think. Is it better or worse?
I think it's worse.
Okay. Now tell me why.
Because there's no one monitoring anything. You know, they tried to have the, and they still do, the Handlers Association.
AKC Registered Handler, PHA.
They don't do anything. When handlers were licensed, you know, you had to be inspected. They continued to do that, you know, I think once a year.
They did.
And they
actually did go and do it.
Then they did actually do it.
Okay.
Whereas now they don't.
Right. And back then, you had to actually had to have a license in order to show a dog for money.
Yes.
And so there was no, hey, buddy, I'll take your dog for $50.
Right.
That didn't happen.
No, because you weren't allowed to.
Right.
And,
and so what happened
anyone
then?
Anyone can do it.
What happened then if you did that?
I honestly don't know. I don't know.
I'm curious, because that was about the same time I started in dogs.
I don't know what I don't know what they did.
Okay. So I kind of agree with you. I think that we see more handlers that we don't think maybe are paying as much attention to the dogs or have as much background or all of those things. And so our goal here at Pure Dog Talk, we want to help people, right? We want to help them do better. So give us three suggestions. One, two, three.
The thing about it is, I think the reason that the American Kennel Club stopped licensing handlers was, I think they didn't want to be involved in litigation.
Right.
And the other side of that was, you can't tell someone they can't make a living. I don't really have any suggestions, you know, just sitting here off the top of my head. I think they should license handlers again like they did before. But, you know, we're now in a world where everyone wants to sue someone all the time. Maybe it was like that back then, maybe it wasn't, I don't know. But it's entirely different now than it used to be. There's more to being a dog handler than just walking in the ring and showing a dog. I mean, I can sit and see someone that does an incredible job in the ring showing a dog, but I wouldn't let them take my dog and drive across the parking lot with it, because I know they don't take care of their dogs, because they have other interests. And when you do this, it's your whole life. I mean, you don't do this just for the amount of money you make. It's a passion, because it's a 24-hour day job. And everybody, you know, you hear everybody say that, but it really is. Because these are live animals, and they can't just be locked up and left alone at 5 o'clock and go home.
Other people's kids and dogs, that's what I say all the time.
Right.
And that's a huge responsibility.
And the people that do this, and you were talking earlier about Jason. Jason's one of the people that worked for Linda and I. And I had known Jason before he came to work for us. I've known Jason since he was probably 14 or 15 years old. And he wanted to do this, or wanted to be involved in this. At the time, he thought he wanted to be a dog handler. And he's gone on to be a very successful dog breeder, and he shows his dogs and has been very successful. And, you know, he's moved to the UK, which was our loss. He would have been a great handler had he chose to do that, because he's a very responsible person. He's one of the finest people I've ever met. He and I will be friends until the day I die. I have great respect for him. I did when he was 15 years old. He was just an outstanding person.
What stood out about Jason? If you're going to be a dog handler, what are some of the things you're going to shoot for?
Well, I guess the first thing is, one of the main things is responsibility. First of all, you have to be responsible. You know, you can't be planning to do something and you call me and invite me to go out to a party, and I go out to the party instead of trimming my dogs. You know, that's just one example. Jason is a very responsible person. He was when he was 14 years old. I was like that. You know, I'd rather be at the dog show hanging around with adults than going and doing something with people my own age.
I was really a nerd. It's true.
But, I mean, I think a lot of people that do this were nerds when they were kids. Yeah. It's a place where everyone can fit in and everybody's accepted.
And I think that's hugely important.
But, you know, Jason, again, was like someone that was very, very responsible. If he told you he was doing something, he did it. We've had other people that work for us. We have another young lady that worked for us that she doesn't have anything to do with dogs as far as showing dogs anymore, but she's a very good friend of ours. She lives in Knoxville where we live, and she's an executive at Jim Clayton's bank now. But, like, she went to Spaniel Club with us and helped us because I know I can count on her to do everything the right way.
Right.
The way I want it to be done.
Exactly. The way I want it done. So I think you hit on a topic that I think is really important, because not all of our assistants, not all of our young people are going to become professional handlers, and that's okay.
Right.
I would love them to go off into the world and be wonderful in another area. But I believe strongly, and what you're saying indicates that as well, these kids leave us with responsibility, with dedication, with timeliness, with things that employers in the real world want.
Right. They leave with respect, I think, which isn't a big factor in the world today. They have manners, they have respect. At least they do when they work for us.
Yeah, me too.
But the thing about, you know, you have to not only be able to show a dog, but you have to be responsible. You have to be able to take care of the dogs. I'm not saying you have to be a veterinarian, but you have to recognize when something's wrong with a dog and know somewhat what to do with it before you can get it to the veterinarian.
Right.
Because when we're out in the cow field, 75 miles from civilization, you have to take care of yourself.
What is a bloat kit? I mean, some of these people that are like, what is that? And Dibs is joining us. Dibs the Spinoni would like to share his opinion.
And we got his opinion.
He's grumpy. So, and I think that that's really one of the great things that comes from this, whether the kids stay as professional handlers or not. I think young people who grow up in the sport, who spend time in the sport, whether they work for a handler or whether they just show their family's dogs.
Right?
They leave us and leave the sport, even if they go on and never come back, with such a different approach than so much of what we see in society.
Well, I remember a long time ago, there was a young man, I can't even remember his name now, that worked for Rick Kashoudian, who was a great terrier handler.
Yep.
And he's now a doctor. And he was a great assistant. He worked for Rick for years, from the time he was probably 10 years old. And he's now a doctor. So that's what he chose to do with his life. And so many people go on to go to vet school or do research and things of that nature. But this is part of their background. I remember, like, the Forsythes were very good friends of ours, and that, you know, so many people in the world worked for them. And they have people, you know, that ended up going on and doing everything that worked for them. I mean, people that work at the American Kennel Club, judges, superintendents, everything, every aspect of the sport.
I have one little guy that worked for me from the time he was 12 until he graduated from high school, and he went into the Marines. Like, you work for me for 6 years and a Marine drill sergeant looks good? Come on, you're killing me here. But I do think that that's real. And I love to see the mentor to success, in your case, to the success of the folks who have gone through that mentoring process as well. And we're going to touch on a topic that we talked about a little bit earlier. We talked about it. This is a little bit maybe of a sore topic for people, but I really want to put it out there. Sometimes we think that people don't want to hear what we have to say, that they don't want to learn. How do we talk to those folks? How do we help them understand that we really aren't trying to be mean to you? We just want to help you.
Well, first of all, you have to want to be helped. You have to want to learn. And that's the problem, I think, in this sport, and not just this sport. In our society today, is a lot of people, they can just go do it, and they don't want to know
the background.
They don't want to know
history.
The background, the history. I just soaked up all the history and background of my breed and dog shows in general, and I wanted to be those people or figure out how to become those people. I wasn't angry because they beat me, and God knows they beat me, but I wasn't angry about that. I didn't think it was political, or I didn't think, you know, anything was going on like that. I wanted to be them. Whatever they did, that's what I wanted to be, the people that I looked up to and idolized.
And so we see people who have success, and we hear that they only have success because they're friends, or they're this, or they're that, or the other. And I think you made a really, really great point earlier today when we were talking off air, that you do this long enough, You're involved in your kennel club. You do things. You know people, whether you worked with them, whether you showed to them, whether...
Right.
And so speak to us a little bit about that in terms of how do you expand your network? If you're Joe Blow, if you're your average person, how do you get to know people?
You do know people because you gain those people's respect by working hard. I mean, my wife and I work very hard. So many people this past year, Linda had the number one dog in the country, and so many of our peers and judges, but more important to us are the people that do what we do, that have respect for what you did. And so many people said that they have so much respect for Linda because of the way she quietly showed her dog. She minds her own business, does her job, puts her dog first, and this is what you can accomplish by doing that.
No drama.
That's what I don't like drama. That's what the real dog people or the real business people in any faction of life, they look at the people that work very hard. And if you work very hard, you're going to be successful. And some of us are more successful than others, but that doesn't mean that, you know, someone else doesn't take as good a care of their dogs as I do. Linda and I have been very fortunate. We've had wonderful dogs, wonderful people we've worked for, but we also work very hard to get where we've gotten.
And I don't think we can overstate the hard work. You know, I think it needs to be understood that to do this right, that 24/7, 365 is real.
Yes, it is. And Linda and I come from a breed that's a lot of work. You know, Cocker Spaniels are a lot of work. You know, we don't just have to put them on the treadmill and hose them off and go. There's a lot of work. But that was our choice.
Right.
That's what we like to do.
Right.
You know, when I was younger and still do, I learned something new every day. But I enjoyed learning everything I could know about the history of people and dogs, pedigrees, and that kind of thing. A lot of people don't care about that. I notice now people don't care about that. Jason, he knew everything about everything. You know, and look where he's at and what he's accomplished.
And he worked very hard to study that and to learn that and to pick brains.
And that's not something Linda and I made him do. That's something he did on his own.
Chose to do.
After he worked, you know, 18 hours a day, then he went and did that on his own and gained the knowledge he has from that. And he still breeds Cocker Spaniels, as he went best in show with his Cocker Spaniel this time. But he's also bred incredible poodles and lots of other things. That, you know, he learned how to do that.
I think that, to me, I look at the folks who are involved and the ones that want to learn. And those are the people I want to reach out to and say, we'll help you.
Right.
And
you have to want to be helped. You know, if you really want to learn, you have to approach someone and ask someone that you respect and you want to learn something from.
Even somebody that might look scary.
Right? Because most of the time they really aren't.
Right.
They're doing their job. They're minding their own business. They have, you know, a lot of things going on in their head and they're working. But we all would like to help people because that's what is going to make this continue.
I think that's probably one of the most important things to me is to talk about where do we go in the future and ideas about how we can. Okay, those of us who've been doing this for a really long time, how can we reach out? How can we help? Or ideas for how people to reach out to you or to Linda or to someone of your level.
If someone wants to learn something, I mean, they just have to come and ask. I don't know if that kid walking down the sidewalk wants to learn something or if they're just hanging out to get away from their parents. I don't know that. You don't know that. But there's lots of people. I mean, Bill and Taffy, I know, for example, love to help young people.
Yes.
Phil and Amy Booth, the same thing. But we don't know that. You have to come and want to help.
So your advice is, if you want to learn, come ask us.
Yes. Yeah, we might not have time right that minute, but if you're interested,
you'll come back.
I used to stand and be annoying as hell. I would stand there and watch everything they did.
One of my favorite things, I had a vehicle incident and I got rescued by Bill and Taffy. And Bill was grooming a wire while I was, and I just stood there like awestruck.
Right.
Just watch you pull hair on this dog. I've been doing this for 25 years. I show wire-coated breeds, and all I wanted to do was stand there and watch him pull hair.
Right.
Because I want to know.
He's a master,
you
can learn.
He is, absolutely.
And you can be entertained.
There was some dancing, but
yes.
I'm saying. Well, thank you, Mike. I really appreciate your time. I know you've had a great weekend out here.
Yes,
you enjoyed California?
I did.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Anytime.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.